let me love you.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Studio Buzz, Global Radio Network. And right now we have the Soul Savages Show, with your host, Q Lynn Green. And she has a special guest on tonight. I think you're going to enjoy that. Q Lynn, how are we today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. You sound great. You sound great. I understand that we have a special guest on tonight.
Yes, absolutely. This is a singer songwriter. She just released a new EP called Far Away today, hashtag the remixes. I actually like this. It's like three or four of them. I keep playing back to back. It's definitely day party music. Yeah, season four of The Voice. I keep up with it a little bit, but when I watched some of the clips online, I was like, this girl is amazing. But to everyone listening in, is a special guest. Her name is, Jessica Childress. How are you doing, Jessica?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Hello, Jessica.
I'm sorry. Will went to, I don't know where he went. I was like,
no, I'm
okay.
Here. I am right here. I just say hello, Jessica.
Did you listen to a little bit of it? The song we're getting ready to play after the interview, Will? It's a great song.
Well, I did listen to it a little bit. Just bear with me a little bit, having a little technical problem. So let's go on with the interview and let's talk to Jessica a little bit.
Yeah, I read a little bit that you were graduated from Pepperdine University. Did you learn about music through there, or was it just something? What made you transition into music from what you used to do?
Wow, yeah, I did go to Pepperdine, graduated from there. I had an amazing music teacher who really inspired me a lot, but what really turned the corner for me in terms of wanting to do music professionally was my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, really, he kind of pulled me to the side and was like, what are you waiting for? You have nothing to lose. You're young. Give it a shot. And, you know, I have your back. And that kind of support and encouragement really gave me the courage to try something as risky as music, you know?
Right. And I mentioned in the beginning of the intro that you were on The Voice, and you were amazing. I think that was second time watching this show, because I don't really check it out. But then when I watched the season when you were on, I was, like, pulling for you the whole way. And then I was like, I wanted her to win the whole thing. You were amazing. And so I wanted to know, what do you take from that? I know the obvious thing is that the performance-wise, Did it make it stronger in terms of how you perform on stage?
I gotta say, the whole experience really refined who I am as a performer, because you know you have very little time to mentally prepare for performing in front of the whole studio audience, the live audience, plus all the people on TV. You know, it's mentally, it's crazy mentally. You really have to harness all of your nervous energy and all of your adrenaline and give a good performance. And I think that that having to do that over and over really helped me, you know, really helped me be a good performer.
That's amazing. And with this new EP that you just released, Far Away, I love it's like a continuation of different vibes to me. The one we're going to play after the going into the break is, I picked the A1 remix. It has like a house vibe to it, and I love
cool.
that. Like, I'm into that.
That's my jam.
I just started getting into house music like some years ago because I'm a musician, and so I like mixing different, mostly old school house music, like Crystal Waters. I know I'm like really new into it, but I know it's sort of party atmosphere type of vibes on this EP, but is that going to be the same thing with your studio album coming later this year?
Yes, it is. Okay, so just to not to like ramble too much, but a little background on me. My mom is Guyanese, so I grew up in Southern California, but with a lot of island music. So when I first wrote Far Away, I had this like very much island, soca, you know, reggae vibe in my mind. And the way the single came out was a little bit more pop. But what I wanted to do with the remixes is get different flavors of fun party music. And I let each of the DJs, I mean, A1 is just a legend. He's untouchable. And I wanted each of them to kind of bring their own individual flavors. I didn't tell them do this or do that. And I feel like all of them hit different points of what I wanted in my mind. And the full-length album is really, it's got two chapters in it. One is definitely like super upbeat, a little bit disco, really fun, dancey pop music. And then the other side of it is just groove central. So it's got that, like, you know, you're driving down, I don't know where you guys are, but in LA, you know, you're driving down the PCH on a warm Sunday afternoon, we got that vibe. And then when you end up at your party, it's got a little turn up, a little feel good music to it. So it's all groove and it's all fun, just in different executions.
I want to ask, so you said you grew up on island music. What artists in particular, in terms of like your childhood, like favorite artists, who are those that you grew up listening to?
When I was little, my uncle used to spin. I remember at every house party, he would spin the old reggae hits. And I remember I got into Beanie Man when I was young. Like that kind of stuff. Like I remember that song "She's Royal," which I think is newer, but like the traditional sort of, I don't know, reggae jams with my uncle and my aunties. And I remember watching my grandma, like all of the aunties and uncles, grandparents, cousins, all of us huddled together dancing well into the morning light, just having a good time.
You took me back with Beanie Man. I haven't heard Beanie Man. I got to pull up, give me that sugar. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yes.
What's one song
too
that... Your uncle...
Go ahead.
No, say, finish your thought. You can say...
My uncle used to play She's Royal all the time. And that song, my grandma passed recently. And that song just, like, takes me back or reminds me of her. So that song is always one that's in rotation for me.
Wow, that's amazing. What's one song that, like, when you hear it, it takes you back to your childhood?
Oh, honestly, the one song that every time I hear it, I hear my dad, because my dad is an amazing singer, is Always and Forever. He used to sing that to my mama when I was little. And whenever I hear that song, like, you know how some songs just, like, put you right back in a room? That song, hearing that song puts me right back in my living room when I was about 6 years old, sitting on the rug, listening to my dad and his beautiful baritone bass voice singing "Always and Forever," and it just it just warms my heart. And I still make him sing it to me from time to time.
Heat Wave, you can't go wrong with Heat Wave. That's like, that was actually Michael Jackson's inspiration for Off the Wall was Heat Wave's albums. So yeah.
Anyway, oh yeah,
I love
that's
Heat Wave.
Right.
Mhm. Yeah. What with this new album that you have coming out, how big are you on like live instrumentation? Is it gonna be that, or are you more like just here
it's all
like
live.
Production
it's
beat? All live? Cool.
It's all
what,
live.
What is
yeah.
So is it like a mixture of different sounds?
I would say, you know, I wanted initially to do like a fully live album where we're playing the song, my band, I have a killing band here in LA, where we're playing all of the songs down as if it were a show. And of course, that's a great idea, but logistically you run into all sorts of nightmares. But the next best thing to me was to have all the instrumentation be live. I got in the studio with this incredible production team, Topher Moore, who worked with Mayor Hawthorne, and Alex Elena, who worked a lot with Alice Smith and Citizen Cope. So they had these, like, stripped-down soul sensibilities. So we got in the studio, and I play piano. We got in the studio, and between the three of us, with a little help from some of our friends, we tracked all live instruments. But even with the live instruments, we wanted the sound to still feel very modern. So the way it's produced, it feels very raw and stripped down, but it's still upbeat party music, which I think is kind of cool, the way we kind of straddle those two genres.
Wow, that's amazing.
Wow, no, Jessica, no, I have a question for you. I have a question.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. Hey, Jessica, I remember seeing you on The Voice. As a matter of fact, when I had a lot more time, I used to watch that show, but I remember watching you. Can you sort of take us through, like, the blind auditions? Like, what did that feel like on up to the battle rounds? And so, can you kind of take us through that experience a little bit?
Of course. So, you know, I told you before, my boyfriend at the time was like, you really should think about doing music. And I thought, you know what? If not now, I know if I stay in my current career, I will be there for the rest of my life. Because I love my job. I have an amazing boss who mentored me. And so I was really comfortable, really just in my comfort zone. And he put my husband pushed me out of my comfort zone. Was like, you need to do this. Give it a try. So I quit my job, and I'm telling you, not 2 weeks later, I get a call from a producer on The Voice. And he's like, we would love for you to come in and audition for the producers. And at the time, I was so confused, it didn't even occur to me to ask, like, how did you get this number? How do you know me? What? But at the time, I was like, okay, yeah. And he's like, okay, we'll be in touch with more information. I ended up getting engaged, getting married. I came back from my honeymoon, and they were like, okay, can you come in tomorrow? And I had just come back from my honeymoon, and I was deathly ill. I had taken so many, like, decongestants and painkillers, and I go in for my audition, and, you know, you can hear my voice now. I was like, up in here, and I was like, hello, my name is Jessica Childress, and I want to see some sauce for you today. And I kind of explained that I was a little under the weather. I didn't expect to hear anything back. They called back. They were like, great, we'd love to bring you in to do a blind audition. And from there, it was such a whirlwind. You know, you pick a song, you start preparing your song. They have these amazing vocal coaches on the show who help you get the song to the best place it can be. So you're doing all this rehearsal, you're meeting all of these amazing people, and mind you, you know, this is the first thing I've ever really done, you know, on this level in music at all. I haven't been out playing shows and this and that, especially solo. You know, I'd done some little things here and there, but this was the first big thing, and it's huge. So we're doing so much practice and so much rehearsal, and you're getting, like, there's so much anticipation. And then finally, you know, they cue you up, and they said, okay, Jessica, it's time for you to go do your blind audition. And I hadn't seen, like, really the set or anything, or you have no idea what you're walking into. And they opened the doors, and I remember it was dead silent. When I tell you, you could hear a pin drop in that room, like, the silence was deafening. And all of this rehearsal and all this practice that you've had for the past couple of weeks just goes out of your mind. Just gone. And I stood there for what felt like 10 minutes at least, but it was probably like 3 seconds. And then the music starts. And I was like, like, okay, it's almost time. You got to sing now. So I started singing, and the crowd immediately just went nuts. And I had no idea that the only person with slots left on their team was Usher. I had no idea what the situation was. So when he turned around and was, like, so into it, and the crowd went nuts, that feeling was so indescribable. It was like I'd been climbing a mountain for weeks, that I quit my job, and I embarked on this whole other journey. I had been climbing this mountain, and finally, like, I didn't realize how close I was to the top until Usher turned his chair around, and then I was kind of able to look down and realize, oh my God, I did this. I did it. And from then on, it was the amount of support and love that I got from Usher, from the other people on his team, from the vocal coaches, the staff, like, everybody really just wants you to succeed. And going through, you know, to the battle round and meeting Vito, who's just the most wonderful person. And it was awful because we clicked immediately when we met, when we first checked into the hotel. We clicked immediately, and then, of course, they paired us off to battle, and we're like, oh, my gosh, I don't want you to go. and we still keep in touch to this day, and it really was the most exhilarating experience I can even tell you. It was amazing.
Wow.
One little leap of faith.
That's incredible.
That's incredible. I'm getting shocked. I was sitting there in the journey with you. I felt like I was there with you, like going through the process. Even though I saw it on TV, it was like just hearing the backstory. Because most people don't know about the was it like anxiety or nervousness, or was it just a mixture of different emotions when you finally, like, when he turned around?
Terror. I was when he turned around, because you're standing there, and, like, I'm telling you, it is silent. Like, no, I feel like no one's breathing, and you're just up there by yourself, and the band is behind you, but you can't turn around and be like, oh, my God, hold my hand, like you want to. And then Usher turns around, and you're like, oh, I did it.
Right.
Yeah, exhilaration, the most adrenaline I think I've ever experienced.
Wow. I have another question. Now, take us through the battle round, because that seemed to be pretty intense. What was going on there? And I could tell that you were really, really into it. Like, what happened there?
Okay. So the blind audition probably looked less intense, but was way more intense. The battle round, because I was paired with my friend, was so fun. We had all these rehearsals together, and we were so dumb. We were just cutting up the whole time. At one point, we had choreographed a whole ridiculous routine where he would get on one knee, and then I would get on one knee, and then he would fake slap me, and then I would fake slap him, and then I would walk away, and then he would walk away. Like, we were just being so extra with it and having a blast. So when it finally came down to do the battle, to do the performance, we had already had a week of just fun hanging out with each other, he brings out the best in me vocally, for sure. I mean, he's such an amazing singer. We would warm up together and, you know, go get lunch together and then do our rehearsal and talk about stuff. So we became very close. So the intensity that you saw was really just two friends having a ball, having a blast. It was awesome.
Yep.
I love Vito.
That's one of my favorite parts.
You can see the chemistry too.
Yeah.
You can see the chemistry and everything. I was like, I couldn't even choose because it was that good. But I was like, I was pulling for you. I was like, but this is so intense watching this because it's so good.
I think Vito being from Atlanta, being a male soul singer very much in the vein of Usher, if I were Usher, I would have chose Vito, too. Only because, like, Vito could just, like, model his whole thing after Usher's career. And what a great mentor for Vito to have. And that guy, Vito, is very much, he's like an open heart. So he just, you could just see him in the rehearsals that we had with Ush, just, like, soaking it up. You know, I'm a little bit older, I'm female, I was trying to get into, like, slightly different kind of genre at the time. So it was such a good fit for him. And he has just excelled. I know, I'm so proud of him. He's my little buddy.
Yeah, it was, he has an incredible voice, just great range, and it just seems like when you watch shows like that, how they prepare y'all, it seems like y'all are already ready to do like theaters or arenas or wherever y'all want to travel, tour and all that stuff. It feels like y'all are already ready for that after you watch shows like that.
God willing. You know, it really does. You know, having to perform at a really high level with stakes that high and that much pressure will really prepare you to do big things. Like next weekend, I'm performing at a festival called Bottle Rock in front of thousands of people. And I don't know if I would... I'm nervous now already, but I don't know that I would feel like I could rise to a challenge like that without, you know, the experience of doing something as big as The Voice, to tell you the truth.
Wow. Jessica, you know, we see a couple of hours on TV, but I can imagine, you guys, what time you get up and this has been an all day thing with you practicing, rehearsing, meeting with your coaches, you know, so kind of take us through that a little bit.
It is an all-day thing. You know, they really want to make sure that you're prepared, and especially when you're getting close to the filming, they make sure that you know how to move on the stage, that, you know, your outfit is right, your hair and makeup is right. They make sure that, so you go through little things like, you know, you start out with the vocal rehearsal, and I had an amazing vocal coach. Her name is Treylani, and at the time, I was having some major vocal issues, working through some just physical stuff going on with my voice. I was going to a speech therapist at the time, so I'd be very careful with not, you know, overexerting. So she spent a lot of time making sure that my voice was really warmed up, that I was being really healthy, and it was like a master class from one of the best singers I've ever met in my life. And then you get, you know, a lot of time with Usher, and he's just giving you style notes for days. Like, maybe you could try this on a run, and you don't need to do too much here. And then my season, one of the other artists that was helping our coaches was Pharrell. So I got to sit down with Pharrell and talk music. About who I wanted to be when I grew up, you know, what I was hoping to accomplish. And he definitely saw some things in me that I didn't even see in myself. I remember we were sitting down preparing for our battle round around the piano, and Pharrell, I was going to try to sing this really, really high part, and Pharrell was like, why are you doing all that? Like, I don't know that you need to be doing all that. Like, your voice just sits really well in like a lower register. He's like, I just did a song with Miley and we discovered that like her low register is where she should live. And he's like, sing this song for me. And he pulled up Frank Ocean, Thinking About You. And I started singing it like, I've been thinking about you, you know, no, no. And he was like, no, 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 no. Sing it in his key. I was like, are you sure? Because, you know, all these other girls are like flexing and like doing the most. He's like, no, 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 let's just, I want to hear your tone. So I was like, all right. I've been thinking about you, you know, no, no. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize I could sing so low. I didn't know that I had that in me. And then more and more, you know, they groom you. And then aside from like the music, then you get wardrobe and they're like, what do you want to be? Do you want to be glam? Do you want to be grunge? Do you want to be sexy? And they have all these clothes and they, you know, make you feel like a princess and do your hair and makeup. And the next thing you know, you're groomed to the nines, feeling yourself like super prepared. And then you have a partner like Vito, and all the time in preparation is all joy and fun. And then you get to perform. It's really a gift.
Wow.
Man, that sounds amazing. And that's great for him to even recognize that ear and how great of a musical ear he has to even recognize that. I think it's cool.
Oh my God, he's amazing. Pharrell's a genius. I'm telling you, he's a genius. And he's the kindest man. Just so generous.
Wow, you don't know.
Well, if you want to cue up her the song, one of her songs from her EP, and then we can get back. You're going to stay on through the whole show, are you? Leave too soon.
Okay, well, what I have right now...
I can stay on for a little longer.
Okay. Well, can we start with the Far Away A1 remix? Can we do that?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, let's do it. This is Studio W The Buzz. We're having an amazing, amazing interview with Jessica Childress. You may have seen her on The Voice, but right now she's on Studio W The Buzz.
Tomorrow, 'cause when it all caves in, I gotta breathe again. Leave the sorrow, and you and I will find a place in paradise just for a night.
Hey, that's Jessica Childress, Far Away, the A1 remix. Hey, Jessica, what a fantastic song.
Yeah.
What a great, great song.
Thank you.
Got a question for you. How has your life changed? Now, I know you have a big concert coming up, but how has your life changed since you have been on The Voice? You're very successful on that, and I'm sure everyone loved you. How has your life changed since then?
I mean, I would say completely. The trajectory is really like, you know, I was doing corporate PR 1 week, quit my job, got married, and then did The Voice. And from then on, I'm living a totally different life. I'm, you know, I get to make art for a living and write songs and perform and do something that means so much to me. Not that my work before didn't. It's just that, you know, I feel like this is what I'm meant to do. This is my path. And having locked into that has just been the most gratifying, life-giving experience.
That's so incredible. That's so incredible. Now, I missed something earlier. You mentioned something about the islands earlier. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles, just a little town just outside of Los Angeles, but my mom is Guyanese.
Okay, I
understand. So whenever we have the whole big family, it is quite an island affair, and it's all the good food.
Pepper pot and roti. Wow.
All of it.
Wow. Hey, Q-Lynn, I don't mean to hog your interview, but I'm just so fascinated by this, and you are so very well spoken also. And you grew up in Los Angeles. And so since then, since The Voice, where have you traveled?
Ooh, well, since The Voice, I've been to just about every one of the contiguous 48 states. I haven't been to some of the ones in the middle, and I can't tell you which ones because I just don't remember. But I went on tour with another soul singer as a background singer. I went on tour with Alan Stone on a bus tour. So, and we started out in Los Angeles, and we crisscrossed the country. So I've been to almost every major market, and then I got over to Europe for the first time to perform, and I was singing background vocals for this incredible Italian artist named Elisa. And the funny story with her, going to Italy had always been my dream, always been my dream. When my sister was in college, she studied abroad in Florence. And I remember looking at those photos and being so jealous because when I was in college, I was so focused on getting a job and getting good grades that I just opted, and I didn't have any money, so I opted to not do any study abroad programs or anything like that. But going to Italy had always been my dream. And then this artist, Elisa, calls me and, you know, invites me to go on this tour with her. And of course, you know, whatever the money was or whatever the situation, I was gonna go. And she called me personally on the phone. When I get to Italy, we flew into to Venice. When I get to Venice, I notice her face is on the side of buses. Like, she is a superstar. A superstar. We were playing arenas. And it was, I got to see the entire country. We started in northern Italy and went all the way down, crisscrossed the country, down to Sicily. It was for, God, 7 weeks, six, 7 weeks. I did a little vacationing in Paris. I went to little cafes and heard, you know, just Parisian street music, which is so beautiful. The art there is just incredible, so inspiring. But yeah, since then, you know, I've gotten to perform in some incredible places. Incredible, beautiful, glorious.
Hey, that's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. I'm sure Q Lynn has a lot more questions for you. One song that you have is called Marry You. Now, did you write that?
No, that is a Bruno Mars song. That's the song I did on The Voice.
Yes, you did. I see that. Okay, I didn't know who wrote that song, but anyway.
Bruno Mars, you gotta hear his version. It's good.
Okay, well, great. I have yours up right now. And so as soon as we take our next break, Q-Lynn, if it's okay with you, we'll play that. But Q-Lynn, please carry on. Q-Lynn?
Yeah, I just had two more questions, and I was going to let you go. The other question I have is, in terms of songwriting, where do you pull from in terms of, do you need music to write, or is it just, I know songwriters, it's a different, they have different ways they write, but what kind of inspiration do you need to write?
It's funny that you asked me this today, because yesterday I was thinking about how I write. And I think it's so different and kind of weird. I don't write to tracks. I write songs. They just come to me when I'm washing dishes or when I'm in the shower, and it usually just comes all at once. And like I said, I play piano, so I'll get this little melody in my head, and if I'm away from a piano, I'll hum it into my phone and make a voice note, and then I'll sit down at my piano and it just sort of comes out. And something that I realize about my songwriting is that it's kind of a way that I get to know myself, if that makes sense. Like, sometimes you write a song, I write a song, and I think it's about one very specific thing. I think it's, like, you know, really fun and lighthearted and just a dance song. And then later when I'm rereading the lyrics and I'm looking at the pages where the drafts of lyrics are, and I'm reading the word choices that I use, and I can like read my thought process, I realize that it's about so much more. The way I write is so very personal, so personal. Even Far Away is fun song, you know, Take Me Far Away, but it comes from like a place where I just felt so bombarded all the time. You know, I live in LA, it's loud, there's always traffic, I'm super busy, and I remember thinking to myself, if my phone rings one more time, I'm gonna hide it under my bed, and I'm just never gonna look at it. And I just remember wanting to turn off, and just the reason I like to vacation the way I do, which is I like to go camping, and I'm just recently got into climbing and stuff, is a lot of those places you don't have any cell phone service. So Far Away is just about my desire to disconnect, because as an artist, you have so much going on in your head. You have so much happening internally that when things are happening externally and internally, it's too much. And Far Away is just an invitation to sort of disconnect. Like, you don't have to be available 24/7. You don't have to answer every text right away. You don't have to be at the beck and call of anybody. You could be far away. You could today could just be for you. And I listen to that song sometimes, and I just need a reminder, like, you could have today for you. Today's for you.
Wow. That's, and you sound just like, I interviewed Marsha Ambrosia and Bilal. I interviewed Marsha a month ago, and I interviewed Bilal a couple years ago, and they say the exact same thing. Like, the way you describe how you write, that's how they say, and I'm like, and I'm sitting there like, how do y'all come up with concepts like that? Because that song, I feel like it fits any occasion, whether if it's like a day party or if you're relaxing at home, it like fits. I love songs like that fit any space you're in any kind of, and you're in good company, because it's a lot of great songwriters that say it. And I'm just sitting there amazed, like, wow, how do y'all come up with stuff like that?
That's cool. That makes me happy, because sometimes you don't know. You know, you don't know somebody else's process, and you always think you're so weird. But really, I think it is, I think it might be just the true artist way of, like, the inspiration or the muse or whatever you want to call it comes to you, and
right.
You kind of, you're at the mercy and at the whim of that stroke of creativity.
Yeah. I just have one more question, and this one, I love soul music, and I feel like soul music is just, I think it's genreless. I don't really, because to me, I feel as though Hall & Oates is soul music. I feel like Vince Gill is soul music.
So mm-hmm. Black artists have created R&B and soul and pretty much any kind of genre we created. But I feel as though those artists that make that music, I don't just limit it to R&B music. I feel like it's any kind of music, country, rock, blues, it's in everything, because it's all intangible altogether. So I wanted to know, I just look for three elements in songs. It's the musicality, the instrumentation, the lyrics, and the vocal ability. And I feel like if those things are in there, that's a great song. So I wanted to know, what's your definition of a great, like, soul, like, a great song?
First of all, I just want to say, like, it makes me feel, I can't tell you how it makes me feel to hear you say that. Like, you know, 100%
right.
soul is genre-less. I'm going to steal that. You're going to see that written in another interview. That is soul.
Don't take it. Take it.
Soul is genreless. And sometimes I have a hard time articulating it that well. For me, a good song, like, my standard is, do you feel something? Does it make you feel something? I have, and I'll just be very blunt, I have no time for silly stuff. Silly, fluffy, empty, just song for the sake of a song, just to have a beat and then put a melody on it. Like, why? What's the point? Because even if you're just going to have an upbeat song, like, if you want something just to be fun, say that. Mean what you say. Like, there has to be authenticity around it. You can have the simplest subject matter, but if it's authentic, it will make you feel something. And I think that is what soul music is. It's authenticity. It is abandoning the desire to, quote unquote, write a hit. And rather, like, let me write something real. I met, back in the day when I was trying to just, like, make a little extra money when I was working my day job, I used to sing for a smooth jazz Sunday brunch where it's just kind of background music. And one of the songs that was in my set was I Can't Make You Love Me, the Bonnie Raitt song. Uh-huh. And my dad happened to be at this particular brunch, and I think it was my birthday, and I'm singing the song, and there's a back room that's behind me, so my back is turned to it. And I see everybody looking at me really weird. They're looking at me really weird, and I'm like, what? So, and I knew something was happening behind me. Little did I know, as I'm singing Bonnie Raitt's song, Bonnie Raitt is standing behind me, watching me sing her song.
That's wild.
I'm glad I know this in the moment, because I do not do well with surprises. I'm the person that if you, like, run up to and say boo, like, I will burst into tears because I really don't like it. So she's behind me, like, listening to me sing, and I finish my set with that song. I turn around. I'm like, oh, my God. And my dad goes up there, and he's like, oh, my God, I love the music that you make. I just bought my dad an iPod, and he was very excited. And he was like, my daughter just put all your music on my iPod. And he's pulling it out, and he's like, you know, I didn't think I liked country music. And Bonnie Raitt is like, honey, I don't sing country music. I sing soul music. Right. And he was like, oh. And Bonnie Raitt was like, you know what? You have the soul for soul music. I hope that you do this. And don't let anybody tell you that you need to be in a genre. Just do what you do.
Yes.
And other people can classify it if they want to. But it's that authenticity. It's the heart. It's the heart. It's the thing that makes you feel something, that you know, like, you know a little bit of who I am because you've listened to my music, you know? That's what I think makes a good song.
That's pretty incredible.
That is amazing.
Yes.
Wow, thank you so much for just taking time out of your schedule to talk to us. This is a great interview.
Thank
I learned
you.
So much.
Yes.
And I can't wait for your new album to come out. I'm very anticipating, because I've seen some of your clips a lot. I'm like, I have to, like, I would actually, like, sit and pay money. Like, I'm waiting for your tour schedule now to come to, like, a city near me so I can go see you live. So
it coming just seems, soon, just, girl, coming soon.
Wow. I know you're gonna, I know you just posted that you're gonna be on, I know you're performing a few, places on May 26th, May 28th, and, June 5th, and then I know they just added June 24th and June 30th. On June 30th, this Hotel Cafe in Los Angeles. A lot of these, are in, if you check Bands in Town or any other, places to where you can purchase tickets, and you can check her out live in California, I believe. So thank you so much for tuning
thank
in.
Thank you so much. Real pleasure. Really, really a pleasure. Really.
Yes, and Jessica, it's been an honor to have you on our station. And would you just do us a huge favor? Would you promise to come back?
I will absolutely come back anytime.
Excellent, excellent. We'll stay in tune. As a matter of fact, you might even see some of our hosts in your audience sometime. And so we'll come up. And so if they say, look, I represent Studio W, you know exactly who they're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. Please. Anytime.
The man's San Bernardino. He's Will's from San Bernardino. So they're a little ways from. So that's a little drive there. So, yeah.
Well, yes, maybe about an hour and a half, depending on traffic. But just at one
point.
Yes. Let me ask you, is it okay, Jessica, what I like to do is, in your exit, what I like to do is play Marry You, the one that you did on The Voice. Would that be okay?
Sure, of course.
Absolutely. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we've been honored to have Jessica Childress on Studio W The Buzz. What a great interview. What a great personality. What a great lady and a great voice. This is Studio W The Buzz.
Look in your eyes, or is it this dancing juice?
That's Jessica Childress, Marry You. That's the song she performed on The Voice. Oh, what a fantastic interview. Q Lynn Green. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
I did too. It was a great, it's just great to just pick artists' brains about the creative process and how they, just the creative process to me is just interesting, and I like asking questions on the process and also like what inspires them and what gets them into the next song or whatever album they have. So yeah, it was a great interview.
Right. Thank you so much for bringing that. That was perfectly outstanding. But anyway, Gorn, what's happening here on the Soul Savinus? What is Soul Savinus updates, news, topics?
Yes, there's so much that went on. Like I said, I just uploaded the Soul Savinus video, the show we did with Macko and Planet Venus. And it did pretty well over the internet. It got over 10,000 hits on Facebook, and I still have to release it on the website. But yeah, it's been a lot of great buzz from that. A lot of questions. Again, every time they come on, they get like almost 50 questions. I still have to go through all that. It was just fun. I tell you, I lose my train of thought whenever they're on because we just go way left. I try to keep notes on the show, but. At that day, I didn't bring any, and it just went. It would look like a jumbled mess on there, but it was all organized. So yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
You checked it out. Yeah, it was crazy.
I did. It was wild. And you know, Mac is crazy also. Oh my goodness! But no, that was absolutely a fantastic show. Now you mentioned at the top of the off air that today is Malcolm X's birthday, and I have a speech queued up if you want to hear it.
Yes, you can cue it up right now.
Well, let's do it. This is Studio W, The Buzz. Your host, Q Lynn Green. I'm just her sidekick, William A. Brown.
Mr. O'Connor.
What is your real name?
Malcolm. Malcolm X.
Is that your legal name?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name.
Have you been to court to establish the
sure? I didn't have to go to court to be called Murphy or Jones or Smith. Excuse me for answering you this way.
That's
if
all right.
If a Chinese person were to say his name was Patrick Murphy, you would look at him like he's insane, because Murphy is an Irish name, a European name, or the name that has a Caucasian or a white background. And a yellow person, Chinese is a yellow man, and he has nothing to do or no connection whatsoever with the name Murphy. And if it doesn't look proper for a person who is yellow or Chinese to be walking around named Murphy or Jones or Johnson or Bunch or Powell, I think it would be just as improper for a black person or the so-called Negro in this country, as we're taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to walk around with these names. And therefore, he teaches us that during slavery, the same slave master who owned us put his last name on us to denote that we were his property. So that when you see a Negro today who's named Johnson, if you go back in his history, you'll find that he was once his grandfather, or one of his forefathers was owned by a white man who was named Johnson. His name is Bunch. His grandfather was owned by a white man that was named Bunch.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line, any point in the genealogy of your family when you did have to use the last name, and if so, what was it?
The last name of my forefathers was taken from them when they were brought to America and made slaves. And then the name of the slave master was given, which we refuse. We reject that name today.
You won't even tell me what your father's supposed last name was or gifted last name was?
I never acknowledge it whatsoever.
Let me ask you about the status of Elijah Muhammad. First of all, is he ill?
I spoke to him today. He is in better health than he has been. He's suffering from asthmatic bronchitis.
Is that why he didn't attend your rally on last Tuesday?
Yeah, the only reason that he didn't attend was his ill condition, and the weather here, especially on that particular day, was of such nature that it would have been almost insane for him to come.
Well, now, did you hold that meeting last Tuesday because it coincided with the general election, the primary election?
I think if you study the history of Mr. Muhammad's work and religious work in this country, we've had our convention on February the 26th every year for, I think, the past 33 years.
Well, now, While you don't care to discuss your former name or the name that the slave master gave to your antecedents, it is a matter of record that Muhammad's last name was Poole, Elijah Poole.
No, that's the name that his slave master gave to his grandfather or great-grandfather, but that's not his name.
Well, his mother and father thought when they called him Elijah Poole that that was his name.
They didn't know any better.
Well, if they didn't know any better or not, they thought that was his name.
Yes, sir, but sir...
Now, what I'm trying to find out is when did he cease to be Elijah Poole and get to be Elijah Muhammad?
In 1931, I think it was, in Detroit, he was taught the true history of our people and made aware at that time that he was wearing an English name, and by not being an Englishman, he looked out of place. And his teacher gave him the name that he's wearing today, Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad.
All right, now when did he become what he purports to be in your literature, the son of Allah?
I've never heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad referred to as the son of Allah.
The prophet of Allah.
I've never heard him referred to as the prophet of Allah.
What do you refer to him as?
Messenger of Allah.
All right, the messenger of Allah, and I appreciate the correction.
Yes, he says that a prophet is somebody who predicts the future, and he's not predicting the future, whereas a messenger is someone who carries a message that has been given to him by one who authors that message.
Well, now, who gave him the message, and to whom is it supposed to be delivered?
Master W.F. Muhammad, the one who taught him, is the author of the message. He gave it to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which makes him the messenger. And he's to deliver that message of truth and righteousness to the 20 million American so-called Negroes, which means he's to teach us the truth, which will awaken us, and then show us how to live a life of righteousness, which will automatically qualify us for recognition as human beings by all other righteous human beings here on this earth.
Well, now, one other question. With reference to what Mr. Hurlbut asked you a little bit ago, you took a very moderate position of wanting independence without having any hatred for the whites. Do I understand that correctly?
Hatred is not involved in it whatsoever.
Well, I recall in a recent plane crash, I mean two or three years ago, or less than that, a charter flight on Air France in which a group of people from Atlanta, Georgia, were, as they say, in the business, as they took off from Arley Field, and you were quoted at that time as expressing great gratification that this tragedy had occurred. Do you recall that?
I recall it.
What did you say? Do you remember?
The press misinterpreted it and misrepresented it.
What did you say?
They said that it was made at a Muslim meeting. It wasn't. It was made at a rally of Negroes, Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, and otherwise, in Los Angeles, who were rallying to protest the brutal shooting of seven unarmed Negroes.
And what did you
by
say?
Heavily armed white policemen in the city of Los Angeles. And because we are a people who have been taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to never carry weapons of any kind, but to get on God's side and rely on God to fight our battles for us, at the time that these brothers were shot down so brutally, I pointed out at the funeral of the brother who died that God would step in and take a hand in giving us some form of justice for the brutal killing of our brother. And when the plane crashed in France, I pointed out to the crowd at this rally that this was an act of God showing his wrath or complete resentment over the brutal form of injustice that had been inflicted upon our poor unarmed brothers.
Were you saying that, or
Billy
do you believe
Graham,
that?
At that time, Dr. Billy Graham was in a crusade in Chicago, and the press, your papers here in this city, quoted Billy Graham of also saying that plane crash was an act of God. And if you take time to check the newspapers, I think that you'll find that this is correct. But no one thought that Billy Graham was so wrong when he attributed the crash of this plane to his God. But when we say that it come from our God, then we're looked upon as being, outrageous.
I know, but you took the position that this was a matter of satisfaction to you for an injustice done against you. And I think that that's a trifle severe.
We did not think that it was a coincidence that 120 of the whites on this plane came from the state of Georgia, a state that has the worst record in the history of America for the mistreatment of black people in this country.
Worse than Mississippi?
They maybe are a little less Mississippi is a little less hypocritical today than Georgia, but both of them are still practicing the same thing. Now the whites in Georgia bite Negroes with a smile, whereas they used to bite them with a growl. But they're still being bitten, and we don't think that it is any worse to be bitten with a smile than it is to be bitten with a growl.
Mr. Calvert.
While we're on the subject of Mississippi, what is your organization's position of what happened in Mississippi in the past
such
six
as
months?
What?
Such as the James Meredith incident and the enrollment of him in the university.
Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wants justice for every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes. And to just take one Negro and stick him in college with the aid of six, 15,000 troops and at a cost of $6,000 is a disgrace. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. It's a farce. It's hypocrisy. Because if it's right for one Negro to be forced into that university, then every Negro in the state of Mississippi who is qualified has the same right to go to that university. And if the government is not ready and willing to enforce the right of every Negro in the state of Mississippi, then, in my opinion, sir, it's only hypocrisy to pretend that they are for justice by pushing one Negro in and blowing it up all over the world to make it look like they're solving the problem when millions of black people in that state are still going to segregated schools and getting an inferior education.
Does your organization encourage members to attempt to enter schools that have been known as all white in the past?
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't discourage us from attending white schools, but he does say that it is better for us to go to our own schools. And after we have a thorough knowledge of ourselves, of our own kind, and racial dignity has been instilled within us, then we can go to anyone's school and we'll still retain our race pride, our racial dignity, and we will be able to avoid the subservient inferiority complex that most Negroes have or are, that is instilled within most Negroes who receive this sort of integrated education.
All right. Hey, that was Malcolm X. Q-Lan?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
You know, I tell you what, in the very opening, let me tell you what I really liked about that. And I think how he set the tone. And the guy asked him, he says, what is your name? He says, Malcolm X. And he says, that's your legal name? And he answered, he says, well, you know, I didn't have to go to court to be called Smith or Jones or whatever, right? And I thought that was a perfect answer. I thought that was so deep. I hope the audience caught that. But anyway, thank you so much for even asking that we play this and honor him on his birthday. So, Q-Lan Green, hey, you're starting off with a bang tonight. I'm telling you, the Soul Savage Show is on fire. So what are we getting to now, the Soul Savage News or the updates?
Yes, the Soul Savage News. There's so much that went on this week. It's been a busy 2 weeks with news, and also a possible impeachment is in the, it was just reported on CNN that White House people in the White House are researching words of impeachment and stuff. So they're getting their bookmarks and their Googles ready. They're like, they already got their fingers on the laptop. Like, what is it that we have to do to get this guy out? So that's comforting to know. There's also, there was some breaking news a little while ago, a couple hours before the show aired. There was a breaking news in terms of former FBI Director Comey. It says, I'm going to read a little bit from Washington Post. It says Senator Richard Burr, Chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and Senator Mark Warner and Vice Chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence announced that former federal FBI Director James Comey has committed to testify in open session before the committee. And it says the committee will schedule an open hearing after Memorial Day. And it says the committee looks forward to receiving testimony from the former director on his role in the development of the intelligence community assessment on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections. And I'm hopeful that he will clarify for the American people recent events that have been broadly reported in the media, said Senator Burr, and it says, in quotations, I hope that former Director Comey's testimony will help answer some of the questions that have arisen since Director Comey was suddenly dismissed by the president. I also expect that Director Comey will be able to shed light on issues critical to the committee's investigation of Russian interference in the 2000 election.
This is the other Senator Warner's quotation. He says, "Director Comey served this country with honor for many years, and he deserves opportunity to tell a story. Moreover, the American people deserve an opportunity to hear it." So, yeah, there's a whole lot that's said in that, and it basically means tell us everything you know about this dude so we can get him out of here. That's what that says to me. Right. And I can't wait. You know, hopefully this is a step towards impeachment.
I hope so.
A whole lot.
I hope so. I really hope so.
It's at this point now to where almost everything he's doing is considered treason. He's sharing information. It's like almost every week he's doing something ridiculous. And it's like, it's at that point now to where it's like, okay, we need to start making plans.
Right. Right. When do you see, when do you say enough is enough, right? You know, and as a matter of fact, as far as that's concerned, yep. As a matter of fact, the White House themselves, they're looking at, the Judiciary Committee, they're looking at, articles of impeachment. They're doing their research trying to get, themselves in order. And they also say that Trump's lawyers, he's going to have to lawyer up because, and the thing about, I was talking to someone that, I've been, wanting to debate on my show. I have a couple of people that I'm associated with, or they are associates, you know, and I'm not sure whether I'm gonna call them friends or not, but they're associates and they are Trump supporters. And I asked one a few days ago, and I asked him, I said, can you be pleased with the man you voted for? And I was almost floored, Q-Lane. He said, yeah. I said, you pleased with the job that he's doing? So yeah. And his thing is, it's all been cooked up by the Democrats. It's all been cooked up by the Democrats. Do you know there are millions upon millions and tens of millions of people out here that think that this is a witch hunt, that people are out to get this guy? And I asked the question, I says, well, who has been tweeting 3-4 o'clock in the morning? Who is the person that's putting out all of this fake news? And he's claiming the media putting out fake news. Who is the person that walks around talking about grabbing women's genitals? Who is this person? Who is the one that shows that they are racist, saying something about there's a judge out here that cannot rule on him because he's of Hispanic descent? Who is the person out here that calls people pigs? Who is the person that also threatened James Comey? I mean, who is the person also who fired James Comey? Who is the person to have all of these people in his cabinet and they're all questionable? So how are you going to blame this on anything? The thing that bothers me so much, Q-Land, is the fact that, okay, if I voted for this guy and I know I made a mistake, let's own up to it. So you have two types of people who voted for Donald Trump. You've got those who are completely stupid and those who are evil and that want their own agenda. So I'm telling you, I don't understand it. He's trying to take this country in the place of a dictatorship. If you notice, he tries to get involved in everything that has to do with this country. And then when somebody smacks back, I've been the worst treated president in history. Well, a lot of this is on his own accord. He's shooting his own self in the butt. So this is the thing that bothers the hypocrisy. I mean, it just angers me. I just can't get over that. If I make a mistake, own up to it. I've made plenty of mistakes in my life, and I said, you know what? I screwed up. It was me that did that. And this person takes no responsibility. But I tell you what wants me to just throw up is these clowns get on TV, supposedly very educated people, and they defend this guy at all costs. And I'm saying, boy, I don't believe it. And so I don't know about the smarts of Americans. I don't know how smart we are, but I know that at least 1/3 of this country, they are completely stupid and or they are evil.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I told y'all, I'm just waiting. And hopefully reading this, maybe it'll be enough to impeach him after the hearing this Memorial Day. So I'm just sitting back. I can't say no more. I don't know how many times I have to say, like, how awful this dude is. And so I'm not even caring about waiting for everybody to get some sense. Because
it's going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of getting the right amount of evidence and the right people involved to make sure it's fair and honest investigations and all that stuff, all that mumbo jumbo and going through all the legal things and all that stuff for it to be legal to impeach him and all that other stuff and have reasons behind it. So it's going to happen. I'm just waiting on it. Yeah, that's all. I would just put that out there. Just hope for people that's ready for this guy, for this this full Minute Maid that's running the office right now. If you're waiting for him to get out of here, it might be some hope. I just gave that in part of the savvy. I said that is savvy news. I was going to say that's ragging people news, but that is sort of savvy news because it's sort of progressing towards impeachment. So yeah, it is savvy news.
Yes, and, it is savvy news.
Yeah, if you want to, right, exactly. Anything. All that stuff is good news to me. Good.
Absolutely.
News to my ears, as much as we can.
And you know something else, Q-Land?
Yes.
It's going to take. Now, I think that everything is in place, and I already know. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, you already know that this guy is incompetent and he is not fit for this job. But on the Republican side, since they control the House, since they control the Senate, it takes them to have some gravitas. It takes them to really show if they are moral people to get him out, because it's going to take, to impeach him, I think it's going to take 2/3 of Congress. And to convict him, you're going to have the Republicans on your side. So it depends on whether they are moral people or whether they are people that just want to line their own pocketbooks. And you have to look at it like this too. If he gets everything that he wants, then what is going to happen with our children, our grandchildren, and future generations? It's just going to be a disaster. And lastly on this topic, and you move right on if you like, is that, you know, what is the future going to look like? What is the future going to look like if you allow someone like this to stay in office? And I asked this other gentleman who I've been trying to, coming up real soon, on my show on Wednesdays, that's the Wheel and Wheel World on Finance show. There's going to be a post 100 day debate, with, Everett James. Everett, I hope you are listening and you better bring your lunch because I'm going to eat it. I'm telling you right now, he's a pure stone Republican, voted for. He claims he's independent now. He's backing off, right? And I'm going to eat his lunch, I guarantee you. And I asked him the question, how would you feel if your grandchildren, he has grandchildren, if your grandchildren walked around and they conducted themselves like the president of the United States, would you want them going around grabbing women? Would you want them going and degrading women? Would you want them to be racist? Or do you want them to be divisive? How would you feel about that? You know, I didn't get an answer yet, but we will. That may be coming up this Wednesday at 11 a.m. on the Pacific time zone. And I think that's 1 o'clock at your time and 2 o'clock on the east, if I'm not mistaken. So, but anyway, enough of that. We can move right on with the savvy news.
Yes. This is, pretty big news. It's been all week. People been talking about in terms of music. This one is in terms of the Escape reuniting on the Essence Festival 2017. They released a minute clip, I believe, on different social medias. I believe I saw it was on Instagram and on Facebook, and I think I saw maybe a little clip on Twitter. But yeah, they're all four members are reuniting, and they're going to be, I don't know if they're headlining or not. I have to check on the thing, but they're set to perform at the Essence Festival this year.
Wow. Yeah. Are you going to the Essence Festival?
Man, that's always a destination. I think just that New Orleans in general is always my top go-to destination spot. I mean, where I want to go. I don't know yet because I have so much I planned through there, and I haven't yet found one yet. I've looked at the lineup they've had for those nights, and they're good, but it's like, okay, I was trying to find some way. I was wanting to go, but since I've had the brand now, the website and all that stuff, I was trying to figure out some ways to, like, coincide that and maybe this show at the same time. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
I hope you do so you can get
I
some.
Don't know yet.
I hope you do so you can get some live interviews that we can play here on Studio W.
Right, exactly. That's just an idea I had in terms of just branding purposes. That would be a reason to go. But yeah, I would love to go and see that. But I know people are going to show some footage online anyway, so I was just going to check it there. But yeah, I thought the Escape reunion, I thought was it was interesting. I knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of timing. I didn't think it was, actually, I'm surprised it happened that fast. I guess because of the response they got from that. You remember I told you they had that Unsuck episode last year that like was like the most high rated show that they had on that network. And that might have been the turning factor of all them coming together with their management or with their whoever is in charge of their teams or whatever got contacted each other. It was like, hey, this would be a good look. And which it is, because I feel like them all doing solo stuff is okay, but I feel like all of them together, that's money right there.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question
that's
about
like,
it.
Because there's people out there my age and a little bit older. Is that specific between maybe 27 to 45 that they'll pay money to see that? So, yeah, that's a perfect reunion spot for them. And I'm looking for them to be at the BET Awards this year. I can see them performing there first before they do Essence. I can see that happening. That's probably going to be like a surprise performance or whatever. They're going to try to keep secret for the BET Awards. Yeah, man, listen. We got this recorded, so I want y'all to play this back. Well, whenever the BET Awards come on and they come out, I want y'all to say, pull up this show and play the playback of me saying that Escape was performing at the BET Awards. And I don't have any inside information, so this is just me guessing. I'm right.
That's interesting. We're going to archive this. You know, we record all of your shows anyway.
Right.
So we will save that. Okay. Interesting.
And they haven't performed together in 15 years, and the Essence Festival will be their first time performing. And yeah, it's supposed to be a big event. So yeah, New Orleans, everybody planning their trips and stuff like that. You're gonna see get a chance to reminisce in the 90s all over again.
Right. Now you say you don't have any information that says that they are going to, how do you get the feeling or what makes you think that they might be together here after 15 years?
Because I could just tell, because like when they did the Bad Boys reunion, I heard about them, doing a full blown like tour. Was it last year and the year before? And I was like, yeah, that's what's gonna.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, look here.
And Bad Boy Reunion, and they performed on the BET Awards, and then they had the tour later. I was just guessing then, but yeah, I probably could find out that information if I go search and look for it, but because I think I know a couple people that work up there, that work to do the production and stuff on it. I probably could find that, but I'm just going to guess.
Okay.
I feel like they're going to be there, but yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
That's
you have pretty good instincts, so we're going to trust you on that. And we're going to archive this, so we'll play it back.
Right. And another news topic. Wow, this got a whole lot of, it went viral. Monique had a show she did. It was a comedy. She's still performing. She does stand-up, still. So she did a show, and I guess she had a moment to where she was being candid with the audience about the situation with Lee Daniels. Basically was saying that she basically said, from what I watched, was that she was blackballed by three entertainers, Lee Daniels, Tyler Perry, and Oprah.
That's right. I saw that. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, if you remember, I think it was either last year or the year before, she had went on this, when she had a movie she was promoting. It was some independent movie she was promoting, I forgot. And she had some other HBO movie that was out with Betsy Davis on HBO. I think it was a biopic of Betsy Davis and Betty Davis, I'm sorry. And when she was doing her promo for it, she was talking about how Lee Daniels wasn't on good terms or speaking terms or something like that.
and he had actually, she was responding to it. Lee Daniels said he was on, I forgot, I don't know if he was on HLN. He was on one of those media outlet shows, and he was being interviewed, and he basically was saying that when you're in Hollywood, you have to play the game. And I guess he was referring to Monique and was saying that she wasn't playing the game and that she was making, like, you can't go in making outrageous demands to people or something because you don't know who you're, basically, just to paraphrase, he said you don't know who you're meeting and all that stuff, so you can't just go in and say stuff like that. And from what she said, when I watched a couple interviews, she said that she would just, like, when they were doing the promotion for Precious when the movie was out, that she had just had a baby or something like that. It was, she wanted to be with her kids, and it was, the promo went good and all that stuff, but they hadn't went overseas yet, and it was a Cannes Film Festival or something. It was some festival in Cannes, I think France, to where she had to go overseas to promote the show, but she said she wanted to spend quality time with her family, and she asked the team of, or whoever that was in charge of that, could she get paid to promote, and which is, and the people, I guess they responded and said, that's crazy, you don't ask for money to go overseas. And she said, and from what she said that was the only way they were going to get her to go promote the show overseas. I mean, that, I don't know if it was just that one show or not, but from what she, I'm just going to say that one show, she said she didn't want to go overseas and promote because she, that she wanted to spend time with her family, but she said if they were going to pay her, then she was going to go. And I get what she's saying because she's making reference when she says this about stuff about getting paid and what's due to her. I remember, she said something about Martin Lawrence telling her that, he gave her advice in terms of to know your worth and go to the, I guess, negotiation knowing what you want. But my thing is, even with knowing that, like, okay, it is good to know, like, what your worth is and all that stuff, but I feel as though she has her husband doing all of the negotiating. I don't feel like she has, maybe she does. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, or whoever that's a part of her team, if they want to correct me, but I don't feel as though she has an agent. Usually your agents negotiate stuff like that. And so from what I'm saying, I'm just looking at it from all angles. If that is, because I've heard many a times that Monique has been difficult and all that stuff, and I've heard different stories. I've heard some that said that she's very nice, and it's all different. It's all over the place. And so if we're going with what Lee Daniels said, he's saying that she's making demands, and what her explanation is that she's just asked the question if she could have that, and I don't know. Maybe she is, but basically she said that, I mean, I can't say, you said this is a clean show, Will, so I can't be as vulgar as she was, because she definitely cussed them out on stage. She cussed them out and said that if she had a, you know what,
yep,
she could suck it. So, yeah.
I saw that.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And she made it direct to three people, and she said it wasn't even white, I guess white people, or the white man or whatever. She said it was those three black entertainers that made it hard for her to book stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. That's,
well, let me ask you a question.
Hollywood inside stuff, because anybody could put up a front in Hollywood. So I'm not saying that she's being fake or none of this stuff is true, because it all could be true, but I'm just saying everybody's interpretation. It would be better, I feel as though, if she settled it with those two people, because she got the connections and those three. I feel like she hasn't reached out to Lee Daniels, or he hasn't reached out to her since all the stuff happened with her accusing him of blackballing her and stuff. But I feel like this is a conversation she could have had with them to settle it out. And I feel like if they have a conversation, it'll be squashed. But since that tension is still there and everybody's saying whatever, then, you know, it's not settled. But I feel like if a conversation happened, but yeah, to me, I don't know. I can't have an opinion on it because that's how she feels. She feels like she's been blackballed and all that stuff. That's how I can't say what her experience was with these people. So I don't know what's true and what's not. I'm just going with what she's saying. And again, it was comedy. So I didn't see the whole clip to really take it out of context, but she said so much in that video. But at the same time,
I can't, it's all comedy. So most of the time, you're not supposed to be, it's sort of like church with comedy. You're not supposed to be like videotaping and stuff. So it's easy to get that stuff out of context. But yeah, she said a whole lot. But yeah, I just say that I would just leave it up to them to work it out. I know that sounds PC and people going to be mad, like, oh, you need to go in a little bit more. But nah, because I understand Hollywood. When you're in Hollywood, you can see different situations to where it's possible that stuff can happen, because people do that all the time in terms of entertainment. So, and even in the music business, they do stuff like that. So it's not far-fetched for me to think that. It's just different variables and different things go into it, and I don't know everything that's in that situation. So I would have to see everybody's side of it to give it a clear thought. But I was just watching a video, just shocked when she said that. I was like, oh. Like,
wow. Yeah, me too.
Real personal right now.
Right. Now let me ask you a question. A couple of things. How was she blackballed? And do you really think that Tyler Perry and Oprah really had something to do with that?
Again, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. Like, they're very powerful filmmakers, and she owns a network, and they all have powerful connections. So, again, I'm not in that world. So, unless you're in that world, see, people, the thing like this, people, if she says it, a lot of people are going to believe it, because A, they probably don't like those people that she named. B, they probably don't like the people she named. And C, people just like to hear stuff like that, and they want to see it's true, because it's sort of her being candid, because she's not Hollywood, so to speak. She's just being her. And so when people see that, they're like, oh, I relate to her, because she's just straight to the point. And it's like with Lee, I get what Lee's saying, but Monique's character doesn't allow her to try to fit in with Hollywood standards, like, oh, you can't say this about this person, and you can't give this many details out and all that other stuff. And so, and then from what the beef was, from what I read, was that she didn't mention Lee Daniels in her acceptance speech when she got the Oscar. And so I think that's what started it, but he didn't confirm or deny that. So that was just from what I think she said. And it was somebody else that was alluding to that she didn't mention his name, and that, you know, I don't even know if it was the Oscars. I don't know. I think it was some award she accepted, and she didn't mention his name, and that might have started it. But most of it, from the interview I saw with him, he just basically says that you have to play the game in Hollywood in terms of, you know, not ruffling any feathers and all that. And so I don't know. I can't say. It's so Hollywood, and Monique just gives the real. So that I can't say if they have any doings into what they do in their career. And I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying I can't, like, define, like, oh, that's true or not, because I don't have all the facts. Even though they tried to throw on the bus with the show Empire, because Lee Daniels had offered it to Monique, and I guess he reneged on it and got Taraji and said, but him and his partner were saying that they never had her in mind, but that's when she came out with the proof that, hey, this was supposed to be mine, which I don't think she made a big deal, but I think Lee Daniels, like, got her. So, again, his credibility, I don't know. I can believe some of it, but, I have to know, like, the full details of it to give it the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's fair enough. All right, well, more to come on this, I'm sure of it. And we'll do a little more research on that. I know I will. And we'll come back with that. But I was shocked. I was shocked when I heard this story. I said, oh no, this can't be right. Lee Daniels, Oprah Winfrey, right. Tyler Perry, and they're going to blackball Monique. And she really didn't say why, or maybe she doesn't know, or maybe she has some proof, some evidence that they did it. And we'll take her word at it until we get more information.
Yeah, I just got two more things to talk about in savvy news, and then we can get right to the topic because we're running out of time, and I want to spend as much time on this as possible. So another topic is today was just announced that the
the young lady from the show Blackish that plays the oldest daughter on Blackish. She plays Zoe on Blackish. She just got her own show that is a spinoff of Blackish, and it's supposed to be her name is the star of the show is Yara Shahidi. That's what her name is on the show. And Dion Cole are supposed to be co-starring together, and it's supposed to premiere in early 2018. And it says Shahidi's exit from Blackish will be addressed next season on the flagship. Cole will continue to float in and out of both shows. And, yeah, it's a spinoff of, they're basically trying to make it like that show, Blackish, is supposed to be like a modern version of the Cosby Show, and so the spinoff is supposed to be like Different World. It's supposed to be that, but she's a great actress. She's very young. I've seen her on a couple of things, and she's pretty dope. And I've seen some of her interviews, and she seems well spoken and very knowledgeable and stuff. And so yeah, it says on this. I'm reading a little bit of what the story is supposed to be about. It says the series is described as a contemporary take on the current issues facing students and administrations in the world of higher education. Yeah, basically a different world. And it says, Barris produced executive alongside Blackish stars Anthony Anderson and all this stuff. Who else is on here? Yeah, it just says Dion Cole. It just says they released her name, Yara, and Dion Cole is supposed to be on the show. And I think it's supposed to be some more young actors. But yeah, shout out to her for getting her own show and getting a spinoff. It's supposed to be, it says something about some show, so I hope it does well. It's supposed to be on Freeform, some network, I'm not sure. It's supposed to be Freeform. I don't know what that digital outlet is. I don't know if it's a digital outlet or what. But shout outs to her for that. And also on the news on that, it's been something went viral on the internet. I missed it a little bit. It was some romper fashion people been talking about, and they've been showing pictures online in some new fashion. I was trying to find who was designing this, but yeah, it's some big fashion craze over these rompers for men. And if you know what rompers are for women, you know, if you see this, it's to me, it ain't that bad. People were making a big, like, I saw Twitter, they were like making jokes of it and stuff like that, but Facebook, they're like making like little think pieces and posts like that, talking about how it's ruining men and all this stuff, and that this is feminine and all this other stuff. Like, this is the worst fashion in the world. I'm like, y'all baddies in the 70s used to wear worse than this. Like, let's not act like fashions in the 70s, 80s for men were that great. Especially the artists from back in the day, like the Isley Brothers. I saw one where he had on a whole, like, a Legion suit with a scarf on, with a glittery scarf with glitter in their chest hairs, and got on these pumps and stuff. Like, don't start bringing up that stuff. And then Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, all this questionable fashion on these stuff. I'm like, it's the same thing as that. Like, let these, it's not that bad to me. What you think about it? Have you seen the rompers they've been talking about?
No. Q-Lynn, you know, I really don't have time to watch a whole lot of stuff. You know?
It's really not that bad. It's just like, I'm trying to describe what it looks like. I know people make some funny memes on the internet I've seen of like I don't like rompers, but it was like your man is a FedEx reporter, something like that. It was just funny. It's just a bunch of memes of like different situations of like basically it's like a short sleeve. I wish I could show you a picture of it, Will. Just Google rompers, and it's just like a short set, and it's like a whole one piece. Whatever. It's not that.
Oh, women, hold it. Let me back up 1 second. You're talking about rompers.
Yeah.
Like the one piece men, things that they wear look like pajamas.
Yeah, it's different. It's like short sleeve. Some of them are short sleeve and some of them are, shorts, like a short set. And then some of them are long. It just depends on,
I guess, who designed it. But, yeah, it's not that bad to me. People act like it's, like, the worst fashion.
Well, you know,
I think if it's, like...
Yeah, I have to apologize to you. I have to apologize to you. I misunderstood. I thought you were asking me about a TV show, but when you say, and then it just registered what you were talking about, right? Because I'm doing so many different things here.
I'm talking about something else.
Yeah, but I thought you were talking about something entirely different, and I was just queuing up your song too while you were asking. Nope, don't like it. Do not like it. I'm not saying it's the worst, maybe they'll get better, whatever it is. Not my style. But I'm not going to say, hey, look, it's the worst thing ever. There are worse things ever, like sagging. Sagging is the worst thing ever, in my opinion. But getting back to a fashion, because sagging is not really not fashion as far as I'm concerned. It's just thuggish. But the rompers, I really don't care for them. No, not me, not my style.
Right. Well, yeah, it's not that bad to me. But, yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on that. It was, like, versus what they used to wear in the 70s or 80s, it's not that bad. Cause, no, it's just people questioning men that do wear sexuality. I'm like, y'all uncle used to wear, like, way worse than that back in the day. Like, stop it. Can you attest to that, that the fashions back then were questionable as well?
I don't know. Well, it depends on what you were wearing. Hear me out. If you were wearing lime green suits, burgundy suits, red suits, platform suits, understand also, at the time, those things were fashionable. They were fashionable.
Fashionable.
Yeah, but I don't like rompers. So let's put a period on that one. But let's get back to the fads of the 70s and 80s. There were some great styles out, but like I said, some of them got a little outlandish, with the paisley shirts, these shirts with these stupid designs on them and these outlandish colors. Like for me, like a yellow suit or a lime green suit, or a red suit or this, that, you know, to me, nope, totally tasteless. But then it didn't look that bad at that time because that's what people were buying. That was what was being advertised. And if you notice how even hairstyles have changed over the years. Things, if you look back at some of the hairstyles over the 60s and 70s, and you look at them now, you say, oh, man, good Lord. That's because it's something that is not, we're not accustomed to it. It's not fashionable today. And see, I tell you what, the fashion industry has a way of changing our minds over the years. And they change it up, you know, so that we'll buy newer and newer things, right? But you take some of the fashions out now, I really don't care for them. I don't like skinny jeans. I don't own a pair. I will not sag. Like to me, that's not fashion. That's just stupid as far as I'm concerned. Now, I know I'm stepping on somebody's toes, but I don't care. You can call me, talk to me about it if you want. 844-978-8346. But no, some of the fashions back then, because I tell you, like shark skin was a fabric that was fashionable back there in the 70s and 80s. Blind knit sweaters, which were great. But like I said, some of the things like the wide lapels, on the suits and the shirts and things like that. If you walked out of the house looking like that today, people will laugh at you. But it was totally acceptable back then because that's what everybody was wearing.
Right. Yeah, I know you said you got a song queued up, but if we can wait till the end of the show and play it, because I want to spend as much time on this topic tonight. Yeah, that was the savvy news. I just say for the rompers, listen, I'm all for it, because I was looking at some of the pictures, and I see, listen, I'm all for men's style meets being out, anything that I could look at. If I could objectify men on the street, that'd be great as well. So, yeah, I'm definitely,
I don't know how to do that whistle, but I definitely gonna be objectifying some men in the streets if I see them in a romper. Oh my God, come here with that nice romper on. Oh my God, okay. But yeah, all right, we're on the show here. We have one for and one against. Okay, you for them. I haven't bought into the rompers yet. Nope, not me. Nope.
One for Tommy. Let's go.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Topic of tonight is, what does your wokeness mean?
What does your what now?
I'm going to try to,
I'm missing something. You sound a little muffled.
What does your wokeness mean?
Your worth?
What does your wokeness
mean?
Okay,
are you familiar with the term "stay woke"?
Stay woke?
Like
being awake?
Yes, it's in terms of being awoke, in terms of social injustice, and that's what it refers to. I'm trying to hip you to some of the terms of the new millennials use now is stay woke.
Yeah, okay.
And Congresswoman as well.
Well, I'm happy for her.
It's just a way of just basically saying stay conscious.
Yeah,
a lot of people that keep up with what's going on.
Okay,
Okay.
So meaning that are you awake? Are you conscious and cognizant of what's going on around you? Do you know what's happening here in the world? Yep, I can understand that. Okay, what does your wokeness mean? Oh my God, you millennials! Good Lord! All right. Well,
It's just everything that I think just summarized everything that's going on that happened all this past week with all the popular news topics as well. The other night, the jury came out with in terms of the terrorist Crutcher. If y'all know the story of in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the guy that got shot, they had it on video of a track. His car got stalled on the highway. And the officer, the lady officer approached him and then just walked up. I didn't watch it because I don't want to become desensitized watching stuff like that. So just for me, just hearing, just reading about it, it was just she basically felt, her excuse was that she felt the fear of her life. And she didn't get indicted. She got off on a charge. For killing unarmed black man in the highway. It was a pretty popular story. Terrence Crutcher, is from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got shot down. And then the juries, from what I read, that they were just trying to hurry up and get the trial over with. And
right.
It's just disheartening. Stories like that, and also other stories. I've heard a couple of other stories of someone being shot down this week, and then it's just everything in terms of, and then also today being Malcolm X's birthday, it would have been his 92nd birthday, and all that what it means. And I know on Instagram I had pulled up a quote of his, and it's such a resonating, it's just something, I've always loved Malcolm X and everything he stood for, but when I read some of his quotes, it just really like stops me in my tracks. And And one of them, it says, don't be in, the one I posted on Instagram, it says, don't be in such a hurry to condemn a person because he doesn't do what you do or think as you think. There was a time when you didn't know what you know today.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me summarizes what wokeness is. And what that, to break it down a little further, it's like when you become woke, it means not just being aware, but it might have been something that personally happened to you that triggered the reasons why you're woke now. I know for me, that happened a couple of times, and it was like, oh, wow, this is really happening. But the thing is, with this information, when you start researching and you'll start, like, you know, for me, I started reading more into Malcolm X and reading more into James Baldwin. All that stuff was already instilled in me because I was reading it in fifth grade, but I wasn't really realizing what I was reading, but it was just reading like that and then Angela Davis and all these different great authors, Maya Angelou, and all these different great writers and philosophers that had all these great novels and great things to read. It's important that when you do that, it's an overwhelming amount of information, but it's a process with that as well. So what a lot of people do when they become woke, as we speak, they'll take that, but they'll go a step further, and they'll try to make everybody on that same level as them, and they'll want everybody at that same level, which is nothing wrong with that, because that makes for great conversation to have something in common with people that share that same interest. But when you take that as they have to think exactly like you do and have to approach every one of these different oppressions and everything that happens in the community, you have to all come at it the same way, that's where it becomes problematic. Because it's like what Malcolm X said, you can't think everybody has to think like you do. And it was because you didn't know before you became woke. You did, basically what he's saying is before you became woke, there was a time you wasn't woke. You know what I'm saying? And so whenever I have conversations with people and they will use language like black on black crime, and they use language like, oh, if they just resist and not fight the cop, they'll help. But it's like, and that anger in me when I realize what the situation is and what it really means to be black and all that stuff, what it means. And when I hear somebody say that, it's hard for me not to retaliate with, what are you talking about? That's not the right way. And then I try to understand. Now I come from a place of trying to understand how they come to that conclusion. Because used to, I would just shut down conversation if you even mentioned that to me. But now I have to take the time. Like I said before in one of the shows, it was a pastor I was arguing, I had a debate with on the internet because he had said something about black on black crime. And I had to break down to him what Black Lives Matter was. He was basically dismissing Black Lives Matter, and I had to sort of give him information he wasn't privy to. And it wasn't me being in a state of, like, oh, I know it all. It was that, okay, he has misinformation about what this organization is, and let me bring up some facts to counter what he's passing off as information. And so when I gave him that information, he literally took what I said and analyzed what I said and did the research for himself and figured out that not that I was true, but what I was presenting to him was what the truth was. It wasn't my words, it was a fact. I was giving him statistics on what Black Lives Matter have done in terms of legislation. But you don't hear that because that's not a part of the news cycle. It's about the riots. Anything associated with Black Lives Matter is always a protest or a riot, but you don't understand the groundwork they're laying in certain cities and states to where it's making it okay to go against police brutality. That's what they're fighting against. And when I gave him that information, he literally changed his perspective, like literally, like he doesn't even talk about that anymore. He's all about being woke now, like being in that state of wokeness and understanding the social injustices and actually researching different organizations that are helping to combat that. And so what I'm saying is that if I would have came at him disrespectfully with the knowledge, the stuff that I had, and tried to act like a know-it-all, he wouldn't have received it. But when I came with an open mind to what he was saying and I gave him the information, he did the change on his own because I'm just giving him information. It wasn't what I thought and what my opinion of what Black Lives Matter was. These are the facts. And that's what you have to do with the state of wokeness is just understanding information and how it's used in terms of wherever it's social injustice, whether if it's, being racially profiled. It's being knowledgeable of that. And then I understand people that don't want to live in that reality. And what I'm speaking to specifically is black elitists. They don't want to live in that reality. And I know this for a fact because I know a lot of them, they don't want to, and they'll acknowledge that they've been profiled, but they don't want to internalize it. When you internalize it, it becomes a whole different thing. Because when you internalize it, you think, wow, like this system is really set up for you to fail. And they don't want to think like that because of the privilege they have, because it is also a privilege to live in a certain neighborhood. But at the same time, if you, whatever city or state you're in, you might be good in that area. But if you go 2,000 miles away from your home and somewhere unfamiliar, you might get profiled. And a lot of them don't want to deal with that reality, but basically wokeness is just understanding what's going on and
being empathetic towards people that are impoverished and don't have the capabilities and abilities for you to succeed like you do, because they have so much stacked against them. And if you're not in that state to understand that when there's actual poor people, that it's a lot of people don't have sympathy towards poor black individuals, brown individuals, because of where they're from. And it is. And it's the same thing in the Latino community. A lot of them that are in a certain class, they're in the upper class or rich or whatever the demographic they're in, they look down on immigrants, the main ones. So when you see a high percentage, when you saw that high percentage of Latino voters that voted for Trump than they did Mitt Romney, that's real.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
They're just as prejudiced against immigrants as a white person is. Just like a black person is the same way. It just depends on who it is. But my thing is, I'm just going to ask you a question of just this one question, and then we can try to wrap up the show after asking this question. I want to know, when was the day that you recognized, your being woke? And what did that mean to you after the fact? And what state did you have to get to when all the information, you can just tell me the age and then the ongoing process with dealing with that and how you deal with news of oppression and all those things. I said a lot in that sentence, but just the age and what's the progression from that age when you started knowing what was going on to now?
Wow, that's an excellent question, because you have to understand that the age of wokeness. Okay, you know, I'm not sure whether I like the term wokeness or not, but I do understand exactly what you're asking, and I understand what it means. You have to understand, and also before I get into that, there is a book. I'm not even sure whether you can even whether it's still in print or not, but you may be able to find it somewhere, and it's called Glass House Tapes. It's called Glass House Tapes, and his book was written by this guy by the name of Lewis Tackwood. Lewis Tackwood was, I believe he was from California, and he was also what they called a double agent. Lewis Tackwood was a criminal. He used to steal cars. He used to get into a lot of different crimes, right? And we're going back to the time now with Angela Davis, Louis Coringa, and a lot of the activists back then and rebels at that particular time. And this book came out in 1973, and it's called Glass House Tapes. And if you read that book, it will startle you, because it will tell you a lot of things that's going on right now. These things were predicted way back then. He was talking about how there's going to be cable, or there was cable TV, and said, be careful with cable TV. Be careful with computers. Be careful with a lot of things that's coming out, because he was saying that a lot of things that you're watching right now, they will eventually end up watching you. You see. Now, he was a double agent. And what I mean by that, he was a crook, and the government knew he was a crook, but they hired him anyway to infiltrate. And in this book, it also talks about Angela Davis, and it talks about the Black Panthers, and it talks about how they used to feed the homeless. And they had, and then all of a sudden they used to get calls where they were at the Black Panthers headquarters, and they were called away because one of the brothers or the sisters was in trouble. Well, while they were in there, it is reported that the government came in and put tax in the food that they were preparing for the homeless people. So, I say this, that when we start talking about wokeness and we start talking about these things, I became aware at a very young age of things that was happening out here in society. And I'm pretty observant also. I study people, because it's part of what I need to do. That is my profession. I'm a broker. I'm a salesperson. And also I've been also very inquisitive about things. So it's been a while, and I always think about, well, you know, a lot of us walk around with blinders on. We have our eyes are wide shut. We don't realize what's going on out here in society because we're not paying attention. A lot of people, you know, go to work You know, you got a nice home, got a car, whatever it is, and then you go home, you go to bed, and you forget, and you don't know anything about what's going on around you. So I became woke at a very, very young age because I've always been nosy. I've always been inquisitive, you see. A lot of people, and I'm glad you're talking about this because even today, a lot of people aren't awake. They don't know what's going on. And you take, for instance, just like the people who didn't vote. They say, well, I'm not voting. It's not going to make a difference, okay? Well, you know, it does. And then I look at it like this also. We have our forefathers died so we could have the right to vote. You know, at one time, you know, that we couldn't go to certain schools. You know, now we can. You see, so it's important to be awakened and look at this things that's going on around you. A lot of people say right now, things are so bad and there's nothing that can be done. Well, that's not true either. We can always do something. So to answer your question, going back, I was awakened at a long time ago because I was inquisitive. I wanted to know what was happening around me. And I always wanted to know the why, the what, and the how. Why are these things happening? What is going on? And how could things like this continue, you see? So, anyway, I hope that answers some of your questions, you know, as far as that is concerned. And I hope that our audience enjoyed your show tonight. And that is a topic that I think that we probably need to revisit. The age of...
I just thought about it when you were talking. I was like, we definitely got to do a part two to this. And the part two is going to be how some of y'all are sleep deprived out here. And you actually need sleep pills. Y'all so woke. And we're going to talk about that. We absolutely going to do part two to this next week. And we're going to talk about the downsides of being woke as well. It's insomnia. Because some of y'all out here, y'all tripping. Just... Also, y'all need some sleeping pills. But yeah, this is a great show. Shout outs again to the wonderful, she just has great energy, Jessica Childress, that great interview we did at the top of the show. She seems like she has great energy and positive vibrations, and I can't wait to see her perform live. I want to try to interview her again, but I want to try to do it in person because I like in person interviews so I can try to get a feel of the person and you know, good energy about people. I can really sense it. And she seems like she has that just from off the phone. But yeah, thank y'all for tuning in to Soul Savviness Radio Show. I think the Savvy Talk, I'll just end it with saying that be wise and be intentional about your conscious, about being woke. Be intentional and be wise about your wokeness. I love the word. When I first heard the word, it became a hashtag on the internet, on Twitter, and a lot of people have taken it viral and are making, merchandising it and making money off of it, and organizations are giving back to communities that need it. And so I love the term because I feel like it's a movement going on, and we're in the Trump era now. And so it's definitely important that this state of wokeness that people be in that. But yeah, thanks again for tuning in to Soul Savviness Radio Show. That was the Savvy Talk, and we're gonna do a part two to that. Also, I wanted to add my social media. You check me out on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You find me at Kulin Green on Twitter at Soul Savviness. On Facebook as well. You can like the Soul Savviness page and also check out the interviews and all the different content I have on the website on soulsavviness.com. And we'll see you back next week.
Excellent show. Excellent show. Kulin Green and the Soul Savviness Show live here on Studio W The Buzz. Coming up shortly, we've got Braxton's back and she has some special guests in studio tonight. So, Kulin, thank you so much for a great, great show. And we'll talk next week. How about that? Okay, outstanding. All right, you're listening to Kulin Green, and that is the Soul Savviness Show live here on Studio W The Buzz. I tell your friends 24 hours a day. Come up next, like I said, Braxton's back, and it's going from 7:15, maybe 7:20, or last few hours, but I'm sure this will be an inspiring show. This is Studio W The Buzz. I am William.
Got caught doing wrong.